You're listening to Adapt and Thrive, a survival guide for the modern marketer. How modern marketers can thrive in the ever-changing and often intimidating landscape of digital marketing. Your survival guide begins now.
Welcome to Adapt and Thrive. This will be the first of a four-part series where we dive in and break down our proprietary process called the L7 Marketing Machine. Cool. Tom, let's kick it off. Why did we develop this process and kind of talk about the birth of the L7 Marketing Machine?
Yeah, no. So it all started many, many years ago. And it's really been a labor of love, and it's been perfected, the marketing machine, the L7 Marketing Machine. It's been perfected, I would say, over the last 17 years, approximately.
Wow, so, long time.
Yeah, we're still working on it. We're still updating it. You know, as times change and the market changes and technology changes, but essentially, many, many years ago, it dawned on me that marketers didn't have a formal plan to achieve their goals. They might have been great at managing the brand, very competent at strategy and tactics, and but typically there wasn't a formalized plan to even set budgets, go to their CEOs and talk about how their plan was going to accomplish their goals. And what I really saw over the years is that many, many marketing directors and CMOs and VPs of marketing, whatever title you want to put at that, you know, that person at the helm, they were typically under budgeted, and the expectations were very, very high. And we started to see, and even to this day, where marketers, because of that, you know, have changed positions, left companies because of this really arduous expectation. So anyways, long story short, we decided, okay, let's bring all the stakeholders together. First they would answer. We distilled down everything we needed to know as an agency in about 44 to 48 questions. And in five different sections, okay? Business review, it would be a pest analysis, political, economic, social, and technological trends affecting their business. There'd be a sales section. There would be a marketing strategy section, and then a brand section. And then we'd finish it off with positioning. And we'd get this back, and then our team would research their competitors, who they've called out as their competitors, and some that we identified. We would research the market. We'd research different trends in their market, and we would put together a workshop. It was a full day roll your sleeves up workshop that we got all the stakeholders together, and we would go through each of those submissions to their questions, and we do not move forward with that submission until we get full consensus from their group. So it really is truly a collaborative process, and at the end of that full day workshop, while everything's fresh in their mind, we will have all their submissions all over the wall in these big old sticky notes. And then they'll sit down and take a break, and then sit down and develop a positioning statement, and we'll hammer out that positioning statement at the end of the day. And there you have really the first true deliverable in this process, this L7 marketing machine process, and that would be a new positioning statement for the company, and then a consensus of all of the major areas of those points of those five areas, and they would get executive summary of that. Now, there's a key deliverable here. we want to talk about, but I want to take a break here and or take a breath and throw back over to you, Teresa, and say, you know, I'm sure you have a lot to comment on this part of the process.
So I have been in a couple Marketing Machine workshops myself. And when thinking about why we developed this process, is it safe to say that this came about as a result of, partnering up with the company? And, a lot of times what ends up happening is we come in after a new VP or a new CMO, somebody else comes into the mix and is looking to shake things up and do things differently. And that's usually a direct result of just needing some change within the company or the marketing plan or whatever the case may be. And so that's why really the repositioning or that final or kind of first, I guess I should say, deliverable of the positioning statement, final kind of outcome of that full day workshop is so important and pivotal to now to the rest of the process.
Yeah, it couldn't be a pivot by the company. But I have a good example. I got a call from a CEO, and it was a referral from one of our dear friends. You know him. I know him. He's actually been on our podcast, Patrick Mahaffey, and a friend of his, and he referred this company over to us. And the CEO called me, and he said, you know, we need to, as a company, we need to broaden our service offering. It's a service-based company, in a very technical space. He said, we want to broaden our service offering. And I said, okay, what's your thinking there? And he says, well, we're just not hitting our goals, and we want to expand our goals. We want to sell more. We want higher revenues, and we feel like we need to get into these different areas. And I said, perfect. Yeah, that's a great vision. And he's telling me that they've tried to do this organically within the company, and it's worked to some success. But typically, there's different folks within the company that may have a different impression of the vision, or maybe have their own ideas. And so he's hired us now to put together this first phase, which is the brand blueprint, and he really sees a value in. And I think most people do of really this unintended benefit of this first step, this workshop in the brand blueprint, where they're now every time we've done this, it's been this amazing transformation where now all of the stakeholders are united. They're on the same page because, again, consensus is key in each submission, and once they've said yes, we all believe in that answer, we all believe in that direction or that submission or that the reason for that, that really unites the team. Mm-hmm. And when you have a united team, it's you can move mountains. Mm-hmm. But it's an unintended consequence. It's not it has different value to different people. Some it's immense, and other it has a great value. But the whole purpose of these workshops was to develop an accurate positioning that we can build a strategy on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk, you're kind of already touching on it already, but let's talk about kind of how companies benefit from the Marketing Machine. You touched on it specifically, the immense value in just uniting the team and getting a kind of single consensus as to the direction and kind of forward nature of what they're planning to do. But what other benefits does this have for them?
Well, I think it gives them a true north as mm-hmm. to where they're going and how they're going to get there. I think that's one of the key benefits. But you've seen through your interaction with clients and being, the account director, where a strategic plan and that's documented and is understood by all is so valuable for us to be able to help that client. And without that, mm-hmm. it can be a struggle, let's face it, because you don't want generally, you know, strategies change, tactics change, they evolve, things are changing in the marketplace all the time. But that general direction should not shift once that's been set, at least for that fiscal year. Generally, you kind of want to stay focused because then you can gain traction in the marketplace. You can sell more. You can hit, you know, help your clients achieve their goals. All those things. I mean, isn't that kind of what you've seen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot more thoughtful decision making. I would say that's probably what I've seen as the biggest benefit from this process is just everything is very thoughtful in both the layout and the plan, but then the execution and like I said, any changes that, you know, the company chooses to make thereafter.
Right. And you have a unique perspective because you've seen the contrast between somebody who's gone through the marketing machine process with us and another client who, for whatever reason, didn't have the time, didn't feel like it had, you know, the value that they sought, or they had maybe their own vision for what, how they wanted to move forward. So what have you seen in that contrast, you know, where there's a defined process as a result of the L7 marketing machine and a defined strategy versus one that isn't?
It can be chaos. I think naturally, if you're in the marketing space, you are an idea generator. That's what you like to do. And at your core, you're constantly coming up with solutions. That's just what we do as marketers. But without the marketing machine, those ideas can be more far-fetched and maybe more flighty, you know, for lack of a better word, than with a defined process and a marketing machine and, like you said, a true north. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, we like to make cool shit. That's just what we like to do.
Right.
But the marketing machine, it really forces thoughtfulness behind everything you do.
Yeah, and once they get past that first, we get through that first phase, the brand blueprint phase, then we do go headlong into the marketing machine phase, where we're going to, we've got seven sections ranging from, you know, the scope of their services or their product to a marketing strategy. We do a competitive analysis. And it's very collaborative, right? We do this with the client. Some of it we do mostly on our own, but other parts we want to pull the client in and really understand the way they think, and they can understand how we solve challenges and come up with ways to hit their objectives, because that's the key. You know, I always tell everybody we love turning our clients into rock stars, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so other sections there is an advertising plan. Creative strategy is another section. We do a product roadmap or service roadmap because oftentimes I always tell clients, you know, if you're not evolving, you're generally the competition's catching up with you. But all those things culminate to now the budget and payback calendar. So now, instead of having a spreadsheet, that's your marketing plan, no, the spreadsheet is a result of the marketing strategy. And that spreadsheet is, we have a unique system that matches three different formulas and blends those formulas together to inform our clients that if they want to hit, based on the, you know, the current, you know, KPIs for sales and marketing, if they want to hit these revenue numbers, then this is the amount of budget that will produce these revenue numbers. You know, it's very much a relationship of these formulas and how their their budget is currently being spent, how we can better utilize it and produce the goals that they needed to produce. And so it's really tied together. And if we do our job and we you know, cross all the T's and dot all the I's, we can get pretty darn close as to say, well, X amount of marketing budget will produce 3X or 4X and 5X, 10X in revenue or more. So that's what we do.
The budget and payback calendar is really the huge benefit to the agency, right? Wouldn't you say?
Well, it is. I think it's hugely beneficial to everybody, including the accounting department, the CFO, and the CEO, because now they say, okay, here's the plan, right? Here are all of the tactics lined up, and here's where we're going to apply this budget. And then at the end of the day, here's what we can expect to receive in revenue. It forces us and the client to look ahead, you know, so things are not coming up last minute. And we can plan for things. We can plan for different, like trade shows, for example. Mm-hmm. We can plan for different, because remember, back a few steps, we've now got a service or product roadmap. We can say, okay, you're going to unveil this new service in Q3 of this year. So what is our pre-promotion for that? That's all chronicled in this budget and payback calendar. How are we going to do it? What's our budget and what's our expectations? How much do we want to sell? Do we want to pre-sell? You know, so those things are highly valuable to the client because it really helps us do the best work possible and helps their agency, them do the best work possible because now we're planning for things much further in advance. And it, one of the things, you know, we've gone to so many CES shows, we've supported clients there. Prior to our marketing machine, I'd get a call in like, you know, from the client, or we'd have it in a meeting, it would come out, well, and by October, they go, we want to do this big push for CES. Well, if you're planning and strategizing and developing the creative for a big push in October for CES, you probably missed the boat, you know, because it's not going to get unveiled till November or December. Everybody's off on holiday. And by the time, you know, you get back, CES is the first week of January. You really kind of missed the opportunity there. It's the same for planning, you know, a holiday season. You know, if you're a product, you know, if you're selling products, most products, some services, most products, you know, you want to plan your holiday, sometime probably in Q2 of that year. You want to start planning for Cyber Monday and Black Friday and all those things, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. So.
Well, we're going to go in depth in each of the different phases in subsequent podcast episodes, but can you kind of tie it all together? What are the phases? Kind of lay out succinctly the phases of the marketing machine, what makes the marketing machine what it is, and then we'll go into more detail in some future episodes.
Well, there's that first phase, that brand blueprint phase, which is really my favorite. You know, it's fun because it's getting a consensus and an understanding of what is unique about this company, and it's uncovering things like what makes your client unique, what makes their brand unique. It also brings up a lot of challenges too with competitors. Well, competitors, you know, we see this a lot. Competitors are coming out with new offerings, and they're really attacking, you know, outflanking or sometimes the client in a number of different ways. And I like to be, instead of being reactionary, I like those competitors to be chasing us. So sometimes we got to get around that, right? We've got to understand the brand, brand strategy. That's one of my passions. I love brand strategy. I love brand, developing brands and everything about them. And it gets the client to rethink their brand and how their brand is should be perceived you know, I see a lot of clients will have a mission statement, a vision statement. And, you know, the mission statements is like, this is what we do. The vision is saying, this is what we want to do. But neither one of them says, this is what makes us unique, mm-hmm. you know. And that's what positioning should do. It should uncover the thing that's most unique about your company and how your brand can really connect on a visceral level with the consumer. And that's what that first step does. And then the next phase, you know, it's more roll your sleeves up, a lot more research there. And it's really hammering through those different sections. But I think the first phase is a good one to get through, because that one just on its face will give a certain clarity to the client that they previously wouldn't have had, especially the stakeholders, the many departments. The next one really, you know, that's hardcore marketing. The really pick and shovel kind of work that we do to really develop a strategy and articulate that strategy in a formal, actionable plan. And then we're in the build and run phase. Then we're actually putting into play, into action, these different strategies and really creating the advertising, creating the messaging, the story that's going to propel their company into this next, for success. Mm-hmm.
So these phases really bridge the gap between data and marketing and ideas, all kind of everything, to get us to a true north for the foreseeable future, essentially.
Yeah, and if we do our jobs and the client does their job, then we'll go into that build and run phase, and we're starting to actually roll out the plan, and then regular meetings and summits, you know, twice a year sometimes, or what, once a quarter, help fine tune that plan, and then in year two it gets even better. Because now we have real data. We have real data to build, you know, to understand what's working best and what's not. And you've seen clients that have been on this program for 20 years. And, you know, their budgets are set. They go into budget meetings. That was another unintended benefit. So I've had clients go in and they go, everybody thinks this is not fair because I go into my budget meetings and I'm fully prepared. I have everything identified and I know exactly what, you know, it's such a great feeling. They say it's so cool, mm-hmm. because my budget is airtight. That strategy gets fine tuned every year and gets better and better and better and better. And, we have a number of clients that, have now been on, we have one that's been 22 years. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been on this program, and they probably have the most efficient use of their budget they possibly can. They hit their goals. The other clients have been on this for many, many, many years, and a lot of success stories.
Yes, we're going to talk about those success stories. We're going to dive deeper into each of these phases. First up in our next podcast, we'll talk about the blueprint phase. We're going to talk about why, if your company were to identify as a celebrity, who would you be? Why that question is so important. It's my favorite question from the blueprint phase. And we'll talk about a lot more. So stay tuned. This is only part one of four parts, and we will jump into part two next.
So we're going to get down to the nitty gritty, huh?
The nitty gritty of the blueprint phase. Yep.
Okay.
Stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Teresa. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Adapt and Thrive, a survival guide for the modern marketer. If you liked what you've heard, subscribe and drop a comment on what topics you'd like to hear in future episodes. Good luck out there, marketers. Until next time.